Welcome to Compressed FM. In this episode, we're going to talk all about no code, what no code is, some no code options, some of our experience with no code, and the ultimate question, is no code ever going to replace the actual developer? My name is James Hugh Quick, and I'm a JavaScript developer, speaker, and teacher.
Hello, my name is Amy Dutton. I'm a UI UX designer and front-end developer.
So let's get into it.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compress.
Today we have two fabulous sponsors. Zeal is a software consultancy and they are hiring, and Vercel, they will meet all of your hosting needs. More from both of those sponsors later in this episode. James, what have you been up to?
Well, this weekend, I got to kind of live out my dream weekend, I think. I'm sports everything. I've been that way my entire life. And so Friday night, I went to watch Jess play in a soccer game. They needed a male sub, a man sub, because it was a co-ed. So I got to sub in and play with her. It's the first time we played together in a year and a half, at least. So that was really cool. We woke up Saturday morning, played in a disc golf tournament. Neither one of us are that good. It was just a thing to do. We ate lunch. We went straight to play 18 holes of golf with a friend of ours from soccer. And then we went out to a brewery and had pizza that night. So it was just like everything sports thing, which is perfectly exactly what I want. And as I get a little bit older, I'm a little more tired, but it's a ton of fun for me. What about you? What have you been up to?
Well, we just got back from a beach trip to Alabama. I think I hinted at this in a previous episode, but we rented an RV, which is a little crazy, and drove down to Alabama to Gulf Shores. And the best part about it, we got stuck in crazy traffic on the way back. But since it's an RV, if one of the kids need to go to the bathroom, head on back. So it made it a little bit easier travel-wise with a full refrigerator and dining room table all right there.
I'm jealous. I love the idea of that. I think that would be so much fun.
It was fun. I think I don't know, for people listening, if you have an RV, I can't justify the cost just yet for us to own it, because with our HOA, we can't have it at our house. And so we'd have to pay not only for the RV, but also for storage and housing. And we just don't go out camping that frequently, at least not right now. So it is more cost effective to rent. But whenever the kids were, you know, climbing and stuff and looking in things, it was like, don't do that. You're going to break something. Get down from there. And that's not the parents that we want to be. So it would be nice, I think, eventually, if we ever were able to own one, then we wouldn't be those parents. We wouldn't be so uptight about something breaking because it would be ours.
Not the parents you want to be, but the parents you have to be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe if Compressed FM really makes it big, then we will have enough money to buy an RV and do tours of the podcast around the country.
Oh, that would be so awesome.
We're probably a long way away from that, but maybe one day. So as we kick this off, getting into no code, I guess we don't even have a specific note on here for what no code is, but do you want to give just a couple sentences on what you think of when you think of no code and no code solutions?
Yeah. So I think no code is when you're able to build something without sitting in front of a text editor like VS Code or Atom and actually writing out code, whatever that looks like. But there's also situations where you have low code where it's still kind of no code, but you might be able to throw in an HTML tag or element in to get something looking exactly the way that you want. But I'd almost fit both of those things in the same bucket. Because low code a lot of times is just for more of a power user for a no coder.
The power user, no coder. I love it. Yeah, it's a really cool space. I think like no code tools, we'll talk about several as we go through, have grown a lot. And I think that comes from the fact that we want to enable more people to, just like you said, build stuff, to do things, enable more people to do that without having to have some of that coding background. But I have, and we'll again talk about this as we go through, like some of those no code or low code options, I have been able to get more out of from being a developer. But I do think it's important we start off with saying, even if you're an experienced developer or if you're someone that's learning, there's absolutely nothing wrong with using no and or low code solutions. Like for me, it's just about whatever I want to accomplish, whatever job I want to get done, can you get that thing done? And can you get it done efficiently? And can it grow with you as you need to add new things, whatever those are? So I just want to make sure that we're really clear. Whatever works for you is whatever works for you. And we want to be supportive of that.
Yeah, 100%. We do stuff, and we'll talk about this later on in the episode, but at work, I mean, we're a team of developers and software engineers, and we still use no code and low code options because it will get us from point A to point B faster.
Yep. And I guess that may be a good transition to why no code? Why would people be interested in some of that? So some of it could be speed. Some of it could be, again, enabling people who don't necessarily have the coding background to still accomplish the same goals as someone who could write code. Any other ideas on why you have used no code in the past or why you at Zeal have used no code?
Yeah, for us, speed, I think, is the main thing. And part of that is because we have tried having our website on different solutions like WordPress or things like that, but that requires a build process. And so for us, a company that develops primarily in Rails and React, to have something in PHP has a completely different build process than what we're used to. And I mean, even if we had the website in Rails, that's almost overkill for a brochure site, at least for what we're doing. So it creates this barrier to entry where if somebody needs to get into the website, they've got to clone the repository from GitHub and install it, make sure all their bundles are up to date or their plugins are up to date. Or if it's WordPress, if they have the database, getting all that set up. And so before long, what might have been a small task that would have taken a few minutes, already you've wasted all this time just trying to get everything up and running on your system. So that was a big piece of it, was trying to make it as easy as possible for everybody on the team to be able to contribute if they needed or they wanted to. But the other side of that is there's one guy in particular on our team that will travel and speak at all these different conferences and things like that. And so if he got to a conference and met somebody or wanted to last minute give out a lead magnet from stage, the great thing was he could get on the phone and say, hey, I want a landing page really quick. Can you send me a URL? And it's like, oh yeah, no problem. We kind of already have a template set up. We can just quickly modify that. Or we could even spin something up custom really quick with a no code solution instead of gotta get all this set up on somebody's system.
Wow.
So anyways, that was a long in-depth explanation, but speed really has played into that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Speed, ease of use, who can participate, who can contribute, I think are all some of the really big benefits of using no-code solutions.
So another piece that we've taken into consideration as we've looked at different no-code options would be Craft and then even the ability to export your code. So we're actually using Webflow. And part of that is if you look at the HTML, the way that they've crafted and they're able to export code out of that is really beautiful. I know that's a big piece as a developer is you craft your code. You want it to look good. You use your indentation and use the right tags and you pick out naming conventions and things like that. And so when you go no code, it's like, what happens to that craft piece? You don't want it to just disappear or evaporate. And so for us, at least, we felt like Webflow did a great job, but there's also craft in how they export their code and how they present that online behind the scenes. It's not the piece that people see, but behind the scenes. So it's a solution that we felt confident in. The great thing about Webflow, let's talk about some of the things that you can do with it as a solution. We'll talk about a few others. But with Webflow, in terms of data, you can use a content management system. And they also have an e-commerce component. So you're not sacrificing anything there. You have different solutions that you can do. Things that you might not be able to do are, for example, build an authenticated app with users. And actually with Webflow, what you can do is there's another company called MemberSpace that you would have to hook into, and they will allow you to have a no code solution for memberships and things like that on top of Webflow, but you can't really do that directly within Webflow. So there's different options there.
Okay. And I remember being really impressed when we talked early on about Webflow, because there's several different kind of visual builder type things that you can use. I've got Squarespace listed down here below. We've got a few other kind of like WordPress plugins that we'll talk about briefly, I think. And to me, they were more or less all the same. They have a little bit different way of how they do things, but they're giving you a visual way of dragging and dropping elements and doing colors and fonts and that sort of stuff. But when you got into just the data and using it as a CMS and really not just building brochure sites, but potentially building like applications as well, I thought that was really neat. And I thought that was really special. And one of the other parts about Webflow, I think, is that they are really big fans of CSS Grid. So they have the idea of CSS Grid built into Webflow. At least this is what I get lots of YouTube ads about this. Have you used the CSS Grid options in Webflow?
Yep. And they also have Flexbox.
Nice.
And what's interesting is if you actually open up Webflow in their designer view, they have a panel on the sidebar that you're dialing in with no code. But if you know code, it actually makes that panel a whole lot easier to understand and work with, because you're essentially writing CSS with clicks and programming those things in, and all the terminology there are CSS terms. So it makes it really easy to use and kind of translate that, especially if you already know code. If you don't know code and you're getting in, it really makes you a better developer, because then you say, oh, I know this is possible. And if you're learning code, I know this is possible in Webflow. How does this translate? There has to be a tag. So then it just becomes a matter of syntax.
We've got a question that I think we're supposed to hold for later on, but I think just fits right here. I may jump the gun a little bit. Maybe we'll answer it briefly and then come back to it. But a question for one of our grab bag questions is low code or no code a good place to start as you're learning? I think maybe we'll just give a simple, like, yes, it absolutely can be answered now. And then we'll talk a little bit more in detail later on. But just like you said, I think learning about what's possible, learning about what programming or what things go into programming, what things go into designing a website without actually, I'm using air quotes here, but having to do the code for that, you're still learning along the way, which is really neat. And you kind of talked about like the point and click for those CSS properties. Some of my experience that is similar is with an extension or plugin, I guess, a theme builder called Divi, which is in WordPress. So WordPress has a plugin for everything, and they've got probably multiple plugins for everything that you can think of. And I think WordPress as a platform for that reason has been huge. You can do lots of development with WordPress if you want and need to. You can also build really powerful applications and do almost anything you want or need with just plugins and extensions in WordPress and not have to write any code yourself. We talked about this in my episode for my personal tech stack, how I started my personal website on WordPress. I used Divi as a theme builder. And it's exactly what you said. You can drag on elements, you can add the colors, and you can do margin and padding, again, lining up one-to-one with CSS properties. And I enjoyed that for the most part. I think one of my learnings during that process, though, as a developer, as I started to get more comfortable with actually writing code, is it became easier for me to do some of that stuff by just writing the raw code myself. So it was a great place for me to start. But as I started to learn, just like you said, more on my own, and I could add some of that stuff myself and have a little more control, then I was starting to get more and more interested in writing that code myself.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well.
Elementor is listed on here and Beaver Builder. Those are two other kind of theme builders inside of WordPress as well.
That's right. So Elementor is very similar to Divi, in that you're dragging these widgets on. Beaver Builder is more of a visual builder. And I actually prefer Beaver Builder to some of those other solutions. And the main reason being the output that you get, especially if you take that component off. So with Divi or Elementor, if you add those on and then you decide you want to change themes or go a different direction with your site, the content that you have on your site is almost unusable because they have all these short code tags that make everything work. But if you take that theme or you change it, if you take that plugin off, then your site no longer works. And you are basically having to start from scratch. Whereas Beaver Builder, not all the components would work because you're talking about maybe forms or things like that, that you really do need the Beaver Builder backend for. But visually, all those pieces, they try and maintain that so that it would still work and your site would still look somewhat decent.
That's a great point. And I think that goes back to things to consider, right? And even if you are writing code, like what CMS or headless CMS, what things you're using in the back end, like something to keep in mind is if you were to migrate off of that. And I personally have not had the experience of moving from Divi to something else in the WordPress landscape. I went to my own code, but I think you've got a really good point of that transition from Divi to something else still in WordPress might not be as easy as you think. So I think with any tool that you use, whether you're writing code alongside it or not, I think that's a big one to keep in mind. And Squarespace is actually conveniently another one that I see lots of YouTube ads for. But Squarespace is another, I don't know as much in terms of detail about Squarespace, but another visual builder that lots of people, lots of companies use across the world to build websites. And I think they've got some database functionality embedded in that as well. So maybe it's kind of similar to Webflow. I haven't used it, or actually I think I've used it on one site and it was 5 or 6 years ago. So it's been a long time, but I know that that is one of the most popular no code options in addition to just WordPress in general with its plugin extension ecosystem, as well as Webflow.
That's right. I've used Squarespace. It's been a few years, but I think they have also tried to expand their developer section so that if you are a developer, you get more power features. But if you're just a regular user, I think you're just able to make CSS changes.
Okay.
And I'd also stick Wix in that corner. I get lots of ads for Wix.
Yes. So if you're ever interested in what website builders are out there, just watch a ton of YouTube videos, specifically our YouTube videos, and see all the ads, and you will see all the ones that we're talking about.
Yes. Hilarious. I also included bubble, but I would stick that in a completely different category. So one of the things that we've done at Zeal is we're a remote company, and every year we've had this all hands meeting. And last year with COVID, we didn't feel like we could fly everybody into Southern Oregon. So instead we had this online summit. And so as an activity, as a team building thing, we paired up and all built custom applications within Bubble, which is a really fun exercise when you think about a bunch of engineers that know how to write code using a no code solution to create a application just within a week. And it's really amazing what you can do with Bubble. And the reason I put that in a different category is because that's more about building an application. If you look at it, you actually are setting up a database with clicks. You're not having to write SQL statements and things like that, but you're setting up a database and you're also plugging in information and figuring out ways to display that, creating forms and things like that. But it was amazing what we were able to do and what we were able to accomplish just within a week. It would have taken a whole lot longer to do that within code. So one of the things that we've talked about, even just the future, thinking long term, is how can we leverage applications and companies and platforms like that so that we can focus on harder, more complex problems and allow stuff like Bubble to handle, say, just CRUD operations. While we're talking about Bubble and Zeal, let me talk just a little bit more about Zeal since they're one of our sponsors. As I mentioned, I work for Zeal. They are a software consultancy and we build most of our applications in Rails and or React. I've worked with them for 5.5 years, either as a contractor or now as full-time. And I can honestly say that they are the best company that I've ever worked for. And good news for you, they are hiring. So meaning you could work with me. So if you are a designer or developer looking for a new job, be sure to check out their website and the job listing. I'll include a link in the show notes, but special thanks to Zeal for sponsoring.
So many different tools are making things easier for developers. And I think the idea as a whole is like, if I want to build an application, I want to do this stuff that's focused on the app, right? What makes it special? We've used the example for different SaaS products, something like authentication, Auth0, which is where I work. I don't want to write all that code myself. So they give me a GUI to manage users and to do permissions and roles, and I don't have to do that, right? I think this world of low code, no code, and code is becoming less distinct. They work hand in hand. They help enable developers and non-developers alike. So you mentioned the idea of database, like how many managed database options are there out there for us, right? Like we point and click and we get a database, or we point and click in DigitalOcean and we get a server, or all these different things that take a lot of the code that we might would have written ourselves 10, 15, 20 years ago, and now just take that out of our hands to where we don't have to do it. So I think that's the real power of blending all of this stuff is innovators are able to innovate. Creators are able to create quicker, easier than they ever have before.
Which is the concept of just because you're using no code, you don't have to have no code through the entire process. Mm-hmm. This is probably a little bit more code intensive, but I believe on your stream a few weeks ago, you had a guy from Amplification.
Yeah, I was going to bring, go ahead.
You also had a pick and plug for him. Mm-hmm. I watched part of that stream, but that would fit into, say, maybe a no code option for the back end, and then you're writing code for the front end. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You can do some configurations in there, including your database schemas and that sort of stuff. It would export out a project for you with the API and TypeScript, just all kinds of really neat stuff. I just really enjoyed that. And then another one that I really enjoyed was on my stream this past Friday, I had Paul Copplestone, the CEO of Supabase. And Supabase is an open source alternative to Firebase with the exact same goals of what we just talked about. In the browser, I can configure my database, do my database models, do relationships. I mean, you see, this is a pretty common thing. And I think developers are almost starting to expect that, to the point where if you ask a developer to write raw SQL statements themselves, a lot of developers now are like, I have not written regular raw SQL in a very long time because there's all these different products to set up databases for us. There's all these different abstraction layers. So I think, again, as we hopefully welcome any experience and whatever tools work for you, just to reiterate that it doesn't matter if you're not writing the code, what you're trying to build is what's important at the end of the day. So one other no code, I guess it's technically got a little bit of low code. I don't know what you call it. They're all mixed. But one that I've been a big fan of is called Construct 2 when I started. Now it's up to 3, I think. And it's a no code solution for game development. And I think this is so cool because I use this a lot when I was at Microsoft, and I would go into a class of high school students or a class of university students, some that had never written any code before. And by showing them how to use these drag and drop blocks for building games, they were able to actually build games in a couple of hours and then bigger games in a couple of days, depending on how long the workshop would go. And I always really raved about this because I thought it was so cool that I could basically teach a CS 101 class from using Construct 2/Construct 3. And what I mean is, like, inside of game development there, you get exposed to classes and objects, instance variables, global variables, functions, loops, like all the things that I would have learned in my CS 101 class, they got exposed to by creating games. And how much better of a way to learn programming than to create games? I went through college, my CS 101 class, it was Java, and it was like printing out a Christmas tree with for loops and, like, you know, the standard stuff that you see. Or, yeah, it's just, it wasn't applications that I could show someone. It wasn't things that I could really, truly interact with in a fun way. So I thought this was so special that I could get a classroom full of high school, university, and sometimes adults really engaged, really interested, and also subconsciously learning concepts that we use every single day in programming. And again, going back to the question of, is no code a good place to start? Yeah, especially if it makes it more fun. Like, do what makes it fun, do what you enjoy, because there's nothing more enjoyable, especially from a potential creator's perspective, than seeing the thing that you're building and then being able to show someone else and say, hey, do you want to test my game? And we had games, like when I was at Microsoft, deployed in the Windows App Store, we had them hosted as websites. So you could literally share this with your friends and family, not just in the room, not on the quote unquote local host. You had a deployed application that was built with no code whatsoever, while learning coding concepts along the way.
That's so awesome.
I loved it. And I got really into the idea of making simple arcade-ish games. I could see myself kind of going back to some of that stuff at some point. It's a really neat, like, creativity outlet. It's a different feeling when you're creating something that's really engaging like that versus writing the code for something that would probably take a lot more time to get to the point of having something that engaging.
Yep, for sure.
So transitioning away from games, I think there's a set of technologies I think that are really relevant to both of us that may or may not take code. And that is, if you're a content creator and you create courses, where do you actually host those courses and how do you host those courses? And we talk a lot about Wes Boss and Scott Talinsky. They run the Syntax podcast, which if people haven't heard and listened, you should check it out. It's one of my favorites. But they both have their own course platforms, Wes Boss at WesBoss.com, Scott Talinsky at LevelUpTuts.com. And they created the entire course platform themselves. That means that they have to host videos, they have to host the metadata, the title, the descriptions, all that kind of stuff for the videos. They have to take users and payments and all these things they did to host their own platforms, which is really neat, but it's also a huge undertaking. Like, if that was the only way to get courses out there, the barrier to entry for content creators and course creators would be very, very high. Like, very few of us have the free time to build something that complex. So there's lots of no code, low code solutions, mainly no code, for hosting courses yourself. Again, instantly enabling you to be a content creator and to monetize the things that you have to offer. So a couple that I have experienced a little bit myself and then enjoyed and heard other people use a lot and enjoy, Gumroad is one. Udemy is another one. And there's mixed opinions on Udemy from the creator's perspective about how much of a cut they take for your courses. I can say for my one course that consistently drives sales, I never would have made as much money with that course, I don't think, had it not gone through Udemy. So I have really enjoyed that process. And then my current stuff is on Podia, and it enables me to do emails and messages with individual people and coupons and just all sorts of stuff. So for me, I love that those types of platforms exist, because now I am able to move in that content creator, to move into that monetization route without having to do all of the setup myself.
Yeah, for sure. And for anybody that's looking at solutions, Kajabi is another great one, and Thinkific, Teachable. I'll include links to all of these within the show notes.
Lots of really good ones. I think it's become more of a hot topic, especially during COVID. I've seen a few additional kind of newer platforms cropping up. And I think it goes back to during COVID, if unfortunately your hours were lowered or you lost a job and you're trying to get creative and you're trying to figure out new ways to make money. Again, this kind of stuff just enables you to do that really quickly.
Yeah, for sure. So as we're talking about different course platforms, another piece of low code, no code, creating these automations. And really that just, again, enables you to focus at bigger, more complex problems. So there's a few different services that we've used before that we have experience with. So one of them is If This Then That. So maybe you've seen this. It looks like IFTTT. but it stands for if this and that. And it's the whole concept of if this happens, then I want this to happen. And so you're able to set up tons of different automations for what you want to have happen based on certain conditions.
And a couple of examples of that, I had a couple of these set up a while back, but if I were to like a video on YouTube, it could add that to a playlist in YouTube. It could also add that to an Excel sheet for me. So if I wanted to use liking videos as a backlog of things, maybe for me to share or highlight on social media or something like that, I could do that. I think there's lots of integrations with Excel sheets, anything that you want to track. Sending notifications like tweets. If I have a YouTube video that goes live, I could send a tweet or I could send an email, or you could do all these different things. And they've just got, I mean, hundreds probably of different connectors. So different kind of events. So if this thing happens, and then actions, like when that thing happens, what do you want to happen as a result of the original event?
Yeah, I think I had one set up for a while where it was if I posted a picture on Instagram that it would automatically download to Dropbox.
Oh, cool. Okay. And I had an Instagram one from within the Instagram app. If you posted to Twitter, it didn't include the actual image. It included a link to the image. And so there was an if this and that that would post the actual image from your Instagram post to Twitter as well. So I used that one too. And I think it could go to Facebook also.
Nice. So another one that fits into this category is Zapier. And this is probably the one that I use the most often. And it's still that kind of idea of if this happens, then this should happen. But you can set up more complex flows. You can create conditionals inside that. So for example, one of the Zapier automations that I set up was if somebody signed up for something, if they signed up in this tier, do this. If they signed up in this tier, do this. If they signed up in this tier, do this. So I had three different options coming out of that one Zap is what they call it. So, but there's several different things. We actually run Zapier with the compress.fm site and the selfteach.me site. So if somebody fills out the form, it will automatically post to Slack, or at least my Slack.
All right. So now I feel like I'm being put on the spot. I had no idea that we were doing that for Compress. So this.
Oh. No, it's no, sorry.
For Zeal?
It's mostly for me. No, I do have it for Compress.
Okay.
It's for me so that if an email comes through, I'm aware of it. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
No, I just want to make sure I'm tracking that stuff. No. Sorry about that.
That's not now. Yeah, this whole time there's been like this whole secret workflow of the podcast that I had no idea existed.
No, I just want to make sure I'm tracking it and that it doesn't get lost in spam or something like that with my email that I get a notification.
Yeah,
for it.
Fair enough. Here's my life hack for that kind of stuff. I don't read text messages or DMs or emails unless I'm ready to act on them. So my unread, and I try to have a zeroed out inbox every day on everything. It doesn't work every day, but I will not read it if I'm not going to respond right then, which sometimes I get in the habit of just putting stuff off. And then eventually I'm like, if I put it off this long, then I don't need that email or whatever it is. But I use my unread messages to keep a reminder for me that I have that many to respond to.
That's nice. That goes back to that whole idea of touch it once. You shouldn't have to look at it, decide what to do, come back to it, decide what to do.
Except sometimes I read it and I'm like, I didn't want to respond to this right now. And then I mark it as unread. And I kind of back up on that. One of the examples that I had to use Zapier for a little bit was I mentioned hosting my courses in Podia. And I was trying to figure out where I was going to do emails and how to get someone signed up for a newsletter that was managed somewhere else if they signed up for a course. And so you could use Zapier to listen for purchases of my Podia content. And then if they purchase, then subscribe to my newsletter that was hosted in ConvertKit at that point. And they had integrations with MailChimp as well. I've since moved to do all of my emails inside of Podia. But at the time, that was a way for me to integrate one platform with another, which I think is really the power of connecting these pieces together.
So many platforms today just focus on one particular service and doing it really well. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about Zapier is you're able to connect all those things so that they're all working together.
Yep, 100%. I think we've had this conversation already a couple times, but just SaaS products out there that do something, do it well, and then take the burden off you from having to do it yourself. I just don't think it's ever been easier to create applications and create products. I think that's one of the things that I'm just excited about every day as a developer or a creative person or an entrepreneur is the tools that are out there to get a job done. And one that I have really enjoyed is Airtable. We've talked about Airtable a few times on the podcast. I track a lot of my backlog of video content, my sponsors, my streams. I track a lot of that stuff in Airtable, and they have an automations tab, which is really neat, where you can do things like send emails, send text messages. I can archive my records. Like if I have a list of my current videos and I have a promo that are recent that I want to share, I can archive those as they get 2 weeks old or something like that automatically. I can create records based on certain events. And I just wanted to give a shout out to my friend Aaron at Airtable, who runs Automate All the Things YouTube channel and Twitch stream. And he is not a developer, and he has guests come on to show how to do really, really sick automations without writing any code, which is really, really fascinating. So I'd highly recommend people check that out. And I don't want to go too in depth into the automations here. We've still got in our backlog an episode dedicated to automations. And I think that one will be a ton of fun of how we creatively combine a lot of these different services. And one way that I do some automations is using serverless functions. And who better to help us host our serverless functions than Vercel, which is an awesome and exciting sponsor for us of the Compressed FM podcast. So Vercel can handle all of your hosting needs for Jamstack applications, for static sites, and even getting into frameworks like Next.js, which they built. So obviously they're going to work really well with Vercel, but it gives you this mix of serverless functions and static sites and server-side rendered pages, which is really, really neat. So a couple of examples on how you might use serverless functions: you could do image optimizations, you could send emails. So if you're looking for an awesome host for a variety of frameworks, and especially our favorite framework in Next.js, make sure to check out Vercel, and thank you, Vercel, for sponsoring.
As we kind of come to the end talking about no code, do you think that no code will ever replace developers?
I don't think so. I think no code enables developers, and it makes developers that much more important. I think part of the idea behind no code solutions is someone had to write the code for the solutions, right? So someone's got to build the things that other people are using to not write code. So that's part of it. But also, like we said, like, there's infinite number of things to be built. Like, we all have ideas on products and apps and games and things that we'd like to build. And the no code stuff just enables us to do that quicker. And oftentimes, like we've said already, it's a mix. It's, I use this one piece that is no code to enable me to do these other things. And together, this is the ability for me to do something quicker, the ability to do something that's more tested, right? Because I don't have to build the entire thing and test it all myself. And I can depend on services that are really high quality. So no, do I think it's going to replace developers? Not at all. And I think it's a similar question. I kind of have this running joke in my head when people talk about artificial intelligence. Have you ever gone to the bathroom in a public place and they have the automatic soap or automatic water or automatic hand dryers? Those sensors never work. They never work as good as you should. So my running joke is, are you scared that like artificial intelligence is going to replace people and developers and stuff? And I'm like, we can't even get that to work consistently after being around for 20 years. Like, I'm not worried at all about a robot or no code solutions taking my job.
Yeah. For sure. I went to a no code conference. This is the last conference that I went to, November of 2019. And they were excited about the things that you could accomplish in no code, but it also wasn't putting down developers in any way. It was also celebrating them and saying, look how we can partner together and create solutions together and allow you guys to focus on harder problems. Because in my mind, the thing is, say you're creating a WordPress site. We used that as an example earlier. If you get up and running, there's so many steps that you have to do to set up the database, install PHP, install WordPress, get the two talking together. Those tasks are so mindless and mind-numbing as a developer because you do them 1,000 times for every single project. And so when you have solutions, say like Webflow, where you just open it and it works, you hit the publish button and it's published, those things allow you to focus on harder, more complex, more interesting problems. As we transition to the next segment of our episode, it's one of my favorite segments. It is our grab bag questions. And this is where we ask friends and strangers alike on the internet different questions that they might have for us. So, James, I have a question for you. And this comes from our good friend, developer Cam. And I'll include a link to his Twitter handle in the show notes. But is no code worth learning? And is it a good place to start? Will no code have a stronger place in web development?
Yeah, I think we've touched on a little bit of this. And I tried not to get ahead of myself during the main portion, but we'll kind of maybe recap some of my thoughts and then you can add on, Amy, what you think as well. Is no code worth learning and is it a good place to start? Absolutely. Especially from my reference to game development, Construct 2, Construct 3. Like, what better way to start learning something that honestly on its own is really dry? Like, if you're just learning how to create a variable and for loops and stuff, that's really dry material. It's tough to get into, but if you can see a character move around on a screen and you can start to learn that way, I think that's the kind of thing that resonates. That's the kind of thing that sticks with people. And that's what I really try to focus on when I teach, is I want to get away from just a textbook. I want to make things make sense. I want to make it something that you can see and understand that way. So yeah, I think it can be a great place to start. I don't think you have to do something no code before you get into code. I think either way will work. But yes, it's an absolutely viable way to start. Is no code worth learning? I think as developers, we're learning more no code tools than we realize we do. Again, like one click database deploys, you used to have to run code to do that. One click database migrations or schema updates or like all these things, we're already doing that stuff more and more. We probably don't realize how much code is abstracted from us on a daily basis. So is it worth learning? Yes, and you're probably already doing it much more so than you even realize. And then lastly, will no code have a stronger place in web development? We talked about, do I think it's going to replace developers? No, I'm not worried about that. Do I think no code is going to continue to grow and be a bigger part of the web development ecosystem? Absolutely, like 100%. Again, because those no code pieces then combined with code now enable us to do more and more. So it's going to continue to grow and continue to allow us as developers to build more, to continue to innovate and continue to just create the things I think that we want to create, which is our ultimate goal.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the great part of that is that it's lowering the barrier to entry. So I think you're going to see more creativity, more innovation come out of all of that. I don't think it's anything to worry about. If anything, it's something to be excited about.
Absolutely. One last shout out to Developer Cam, has been super active in asking questions for the podcast. And we genuinely appreciate that, because otherwise this section would get pretty awkward. So the last thing to do as we wrap up is our picks and plugs section. That's where we pick something that we enjoy that we want to share with you all, and then selfishly plug something of our own. Amy, do you want to kick us off with picks and plugs?
Yeah. So my pick for the week is a application called iStat Menu. And this is a application that runs in my menu bar, and it's kind of geeky. It tells you how much memory you're currently using. It tells me how full my hard drives are. It tells me how fast my CPU is running. If there's applications that are blocking, like right now it says that Chrome is using 125%. I don't know how that works because it's over of my CPU. But the thing that I love about it is if my computer starts acting slow, I can quickly glance up and see, okay, is this a CPU issue? Is it a memory issue? Do I need to look at my hard drive? And I can assess from there. So if it's an application that's blocking something, like Chrome is running at 125%, I can quit and restart Chrome, but allows me to figure out what the problem is pretty quickly. I'm also going to plug my YouTube channel that is Self-Teach Me, and I am currently publishing a series on the audio player that you see on the compressed.fm site. So the last video that was posted was an hour long. It was a beast of a video, but it walked through the entire process from styling with styled components all the way to creating it in JavaScript and writing use effects and things like that. So there's a few other videos coming down the pipe with that, where we create specific chapter marks. You have a link where you can actually click on the link and it'll control the video where it starts playing in the page. And then also abstracting all of the logic to create a custom hook library. So fun things ahead. James, what about you?
Nice. Yeah, I am going to pick Chacos, which these are pretty popular, I think, especially in the United States. So if people haven't heard of these, they're basically just sandals with these straps, and you can put your foot in it, you tighten down these straps, and they're sandals, and you're off to go. And they're great to wear for hiking, especially if you're going like in and out of water, that sort of stuff. I've seen people wear these for years. I've heard people rave about them. And for Christmas, my wife got a deal on shoes where it was buy one and get one ridiculously cheap. And it wasn't the time for me to wear Chacos, but coming towards the summer, I got them for Christmas and now had them available. And I went to a bachelor party in Charleston, South Carolina, and wore these, and they were so comfortable. I actually struggle a lot with shoes. I have a lot of foot pain, so I'm really picky about shoes that I wear. And the Chacos were just really, really comfortable, so much more than I ever thought they would be. So it's a great kind of utility shoe for a lot of different things, especially if you're doing camping, hiking, going in and out of water, that sort of stuff. So I really enjoyed them. And then I will plug my YouTube channel as well. And specifically, I'd been kind of experimenting with Svelte as a framework and really enjoyed it, and have been working on the Svelte Kit crash course. Svelte Kit is a framework built on top of Svelte, similar to what Next.js is on top of React. And so I released my Svelte Kit crash course talking about server-side rendering API routes, Svelte stores, integrating with Tailwind CSS to build a Pokedex. I'm a big Pokemon fan. That's been a big part of my childhood and honestly through college and a little bit after that too. But it's a fun crash course to learn SvelteKit, which is currently in beta. So I may have to update that when they get out of beta. But I had a lot of fun, cool new framework in Svelte that hopefully other people will enjoy as well. That's going to wrap up this episode on no code. And the next episode, we are going to break down our desk setups. Like, I would give you a list of the things, but it's going to be so much that it's probably just better that you tune in for the next episode when we get there and when it comes out. So thanks everybody for hanging out with us talking no code. We'll see you in the next one.